when we had spoken, you had mentioned that you felt that the federal courts were probably the most or least dishonest entity in government. I don't know if I phrased it.
Yes, Bob and I had I think it was like the first time we talked, and I remember we started the conversation with we just have a few minutes, so we've got to, you know, do this quickly, and then about 45 minutes later, yes. But one of the subjects we got into was the federal courts, and we do a lot of litigation, and we almost never want to be in state court. And I don't never know quite how to put it, but I've talked to attorneys and they'll say, well, why don't you want to be in state court? And I'll say, well, you know, don't quote me to the judge saying this, but because the state courts are crooked. And you know, it's not always, not every judge, but the state courts are so political and so pro-government. And I do think, for someone who loves term limits, who I believe the Supreme Court ought to be term limited, the U.S. Supreme Court, but I like the lifetime tenure of federal judges, and I believe that of all the branches of government at all levels, the most functional, and I'm not arguing it's functioning, but the most functional are the federal courts. It's the one place where they will go against the grain of politics and decide things occasionally with some guts and with some real belief in the Constitution. And sometimes even when I disagree with them, I can see some, at least some guts on the federal court. So I think it's kind of an interesting thing, and I think it's a great conversation starter to suggest that the federal courts, especially to your conservative friends, that the federal courts are the most functional part of our government.
Right here. More of a comment. When Wes was speaking, he was mentioning that we have lost membership and participation in the Libertarian Party over the last 10 years. And I had a conversation afterwards with a couple of people as to why that happened. And I think you provided the answer when you said embrace defeat. You know, a lot of people come into the party thinking that they can resolve this whole mess in a couple of years. And it ain't so. In fact, those of us who stick with it find some measure of success. And one thing that I love when I run for office, and I'm afraid I'm going to become, a permanent, Harold Stassen of Maryland at this point, but...
But we know how to spell Harold Stassen's name, that's for sure. And we know what he did.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah. I find that the people that I run against, the incumbents, all of them, they don't like it. They hate it. Even though they know that I'm only going to get like 3% or at most, they hate it. And that shakes them up. When you said the 19% that they had in Virginia, that campaign, you're absolutely correct. You know, they listen to that. So even 3% bothers them.
Yes, and I'll tell you what. There are, you can track defeats for congressional races, and you'll see that after redistricting, there's always a bump in the defeat rate. And the reason people see that and understand it to be, well, they changed the district, so they got some new voters, and those voters, their name ID wasn't as high, or they hadn't done all kinds of favors, getting people through the bureaucracy that they created, that type of thing. But I think part of it is also that after those redistrictings in the 02 year, you have folks thinking they're going to be more vulnerable, and that perception becomes reality. If we had well-funded challengers against incumbents all the time, the defeat rate for incumbents would go way up. They are not so invulnerable. But people know I'd be better off to wait for the open seat. The other thing is we need to push them. We need to keep them on edge, because I'll tell you, the more scared they are, the more decent human beings they are to deal with. And not because they're different evil fellows, but because they're just like us. You give any of us way too much power and let us hold it year after year after year, we're going to get less and less nice to deal with. The other thing real quick I think that's important for people to realize is we all look at this, and in our younger days, especially if the party was first starting, people used to say things like liberty in our lifetime. And, at 19 years old, that sounded really great. Now I'm a little more skeptical. But I think another way to look at it is you never get to the promised land, at least not in this world. And so I think you have to look at it and say, you know, we get insurance. I have insurance, because if something happens to me, heaven forbid, I want my kids to have a little money to make their way in the world. I don't want to leave them high and dry. But the truth is, if you think about it, those kids are going to be all right. I've got a very bright wife. I have other people that would help out. The real thing that I'd like to be able to leave them is a free country to live in. I'd like them to have that. And that's why what we're doing here is part of that insurance premium to get that. And when we run a campaign that maybe we didn't win, but we changed some minds, that's part of those insurance premiums. You know, I don't know. I went to jail for 5.5 months because I didn't register for the draft. Now, today we don't have a draft. I think that the public is more opposed to conscription today than at any time in my lifetime. Did my action lead to that result? Certainly not alone, and maybe not at all. But it was the right action to take. And you know what? The more we take the right actions, the more we tend to get the right results. Just like someone said, you know, the harder I work, the luckier I seem to get.
I'll add to that one thing. Sometimes people say to me, I'm sorry you lost. My answer always is, you can't lose what you never have.
That's good. Let me get Dean, and then we'll get back to Spear.
Thanks for the thought, Paul. I like it very much, and I agree with virtually everything in it. But there's one item I have a concern about, and that is that your first commandment could be interpreted in a way that it contradicts most of the others. I know you said do something, but I think some people might hear you say do anything. And I'm afraid that sometimes we do things that actually contradict your other advice, and I think we have to be careful about that. When I look at the decline of the Libertarian Party over the last 10 years, I always think that there was a golden opportunity that was blown about 10 years ago. That was when we were the only people, the only party whose political platform put us clearly against the Iraq and Afghani wars. But we didn't stand by that. We turned against it. And I think we not only blew the opportunity, but we also set into motion the subsequent decline. So that's a comment, but I welcome your opportunity to clarify what do something means.
Well, you know, I want it to be pretty open-ended because I hate to kind of say do something sensible. That doesn't sound right. Do something good. No, maybe it's do something with all these other things in mind. Because obviously there are things that are not helpful. You know, some people will say any press is good press if they spell your name correctly. No, that's not true. And I don't know, because I didn't follow it enough. You know, there were I think a lot of punches pulled. There were a lot of punches pulled by conservatives during the Bush administration. And I know a lot of conservatives who feel guilty, and a lot of times they're the ones who didn't pull so many punches. They threw some of them. They still feel guilty. I did a column not long ago, and someone it was about the White Rose movement at the University of Munich during Nazi days. Several people executed because they handed out flyers and painted down with Hitler on buildings throughout the city and so on. I wrote a column where I just told that story. That's all I did. Ended it. And I had a guy write a comment saying, I don't like thinly veiled comparisons between Obama and Hitler. Well, good, because I didn't make one. And then someone else said, why did you refuse to take Bush to task for torture and rendition and so on and so on? And by golly, you know, I was livid, because and I feel bad. I've written my column for different groups, and we generally did not deal any with foreign policy, and I felt like I hadn't been able to say enough. Well, I was able to pull two columns and seven different common sense, and literally went to, I almost never comment, but went to put that in there. It is really critical. There's going to be swings. And almost all the Democrats took a dive against Bush on going to Iraq. But libertarians are going to have their opportunities when the country is swinging the other way oftentimes. I've thought the same thing about the drug war. Republicans and Democrats have reasons not to be right on the drug war, because still that movable 2 or 3 or 4 or 5% of the vote moves on the emotion of having a kid who may have died from an overdose, or who you've spent thousands and their life has been wrecked and they're in and out of facilities and so on. That's where the emotion is on that issue for the most part. If you do an initiative, well, then the good sense says, hey, you know, they got cancer, let them have marijuana. But it's stuff like that where libertarians, not only is it incumbent on us to be the conscience of the nation, it's good politics. And you won't reap the rewards that year, you'll reap them the next year and the next year and the next year. So trust me, the opportunity to be the conscience of the nation is not gone forever. It will be back every day, every week. Let me get Spear and then I'll get you.
Two things. I've been working a lot with Tea Parties around the state. And I'd like to get your comments on what you think is the impact they're going to have on the two major parties and the Libertarian Party. The other thing I'd like to ask you is what do you think the impact is campaign finance of Supreme Court rules?
Let me take the second first, because it's easier, I think, less complex. I think it's a great ruling. Everything you hear in the press, all the screaming about corporate spending, it's kind of like when you're getting, you know, you're starting to take flack, you know you're in the right place. That's the same kind of thing. When you hear the New York Times and the Washington Post and MSNBC scream that loudly about a court decision, you know something good is happening.
Can I comment on that? I think what's really bugging them is before, they said the big money, the Tony Countless could buy the votes off a lot cheaper. Now that it's open, they're going to have to put some real money on the case. That's really taking them up.
Well, the other thing, though, is that they're ignoring where spending will come from. Before Walmart was attacked in a very concerted effort, I think they were spending, what, $50,000 a year on lobbyists and governmental relations? Now they're spending millions. Microsoft, same story before they were attacked by the Justice Department. Business, it's not that business isn't looking for special treatment. They will. If someone, you know, if they pull their head up for a second and go, oh, yeah, there's a lot of money that we can make by going to Washington, and we hire a lobbyist for, you know, $10,000 and we make $10 billion, hey, that's you know, anybody can see the benefit there. But that's not where a lot of it comes from. Where money will come into politics is where it ought to come, it seems to me. And not that there's anything wrong with them spending money, but it will come from Citizens United. That was a nonprofit group. It'll come from U.S. Term Limits, who for the most part, last few years, has not done any issue ads. It'll come from the NRA. It'll come from the Sierra Club. These are organizations that are all corporations that have been silenced to a large extent by the campaign finance law. So I see it as a very good decision. I think there's a very interesting case going to the Supreme Court out of Washington State, Doe v. Reed, and it's off of a referendum. They took their civil unions law to a referendum. The referendum lost. The civil unions law is law now in Washington State. But there was a threat that someone was going to take the people who signed it and put those on the internet. And they sued in federal court and said, look, we have a right to be anonymous. This is a path to harassment. That is now going all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court. And it certainly implicates campaign finance, because, you know, my view on campaign finance is I love disclosure. I love sunshine, as long as it's not enforced by the government at the penalty of fines and imprisonment. In other words, I like it when people disclose stuff to the public, but ought to be their choice. It ought not be by law. So I do think this whole area, you see some good things happening, and there's no silver bullets, but I think you're going to see more people able to speak out. As for the Tea Parties, it is probably the biggest bang for the buck that has ever happened politically. And I don't know who all the people were who started them, because it was started by a bunch of different people, different places. But on a shoestring, grassroots folks created a movement that rivals any movement out there. I mean, Obama's massive army of emails and contributors are either depressed and unable to do stuff or not so massive, but the Tea Party has had tremendous impact, and I think because it speaks for the unaligned voter, and I think the biggest mistake the Tea Party could make is to appear or to actually get in bed with the Republicans. Not only will it hurt the Tea Party, it will hurt Republicans. Republicans are better off, they'll win more elections with an independent Tea Party movement than they will win if the Tea Party movement became part of the Republican Party, because the Republican brand is wounded. It's wounded for all the right reasons. It's wounded with Republicans, frankly. I mean, a lot of the people I talk to on a daily basis are Republicans, and you know, I don't think it's wounded with anybody more than them. So I do think the Tea Party is one of the best things that's happened.
Have you found the coffee shop, the new coffee shop
that's
coming up?
There's a Green Tea Party that has gotten going, which tends to be more left, more environmental, but seems to be somewhat at least open. The coffee parties, from what I have read, and it's simply, I don't know any of the people involved, but from what I've read, are almost all operatives who were involved in Obama's campaign. And so it just doesn't have the same feel. And if you were going to do a Tea Party thing from the left, the same would be true. If it's part of the Democratic Party, you know, the people don't have a memory forever, but they don't have amnesia. And clearly they know that a group that's kind of wholly owned by the Republicans or the Democrats is not going to be a true reform group. I think having Sarah Palin at that event in Nashville was the worst move made by any Tea Party anywhere. And not just because it was, I'm not a big fan of Sarah Palin. I don't personally think she's ready for prime time. But it's not because it was Sarah Palin. It's because having any Republican or Democratic elected official, the Tea Party gained its credibility, I think, when it told Michael Steele and several other people, no, you can't come. We don't want you to speak. You can come. Stand in the audience like you should. So we have, did you want to ask a question? Oh. I do have amnesia.
Do you believe in the more wide open initiatives and referendum, the better? And I'll give an example. My brother lives in Florida, and he's a civil engineer, and they don't have a state income tax in Florida, though the legislators have been trying like hell for years to get one. They put a thing on the ballot to have a high speed train between Daytona and Tampa to go through Disney, and everybody, it sounded nice and fantastic and utopian, but they didn't tell you what the price tag was going to be for that. And that was the foot in the door to get a state income tax going. Now, they did undo that eventually.
By initiative.
Right.
It's the broader question, the narrow question is Florida, where they passed a high-speed rail train. Bad idea. They came back to the legislature was scared to touch it. They put something on the ballot and repealed it 2 years or 4 years later. And the legislature had not implemented it, which is a problem, even though I didn't like the policy. The legislature ought to be implementing the policies that the voters vote for and make into law. So it's, you know, I do like a pretty wide open initiative. I don't think, no matter what stupid things they do on the ballot, and from time to time they do stupid things, that you're ever going to see an income tax foisted on the public through an initiative. That's not how. If you look at, you know, initiative has been around since 1898. If you look at the march of government in the last 100 years, you will not notice this initiative that gave government more power, and then this initiative, and then this initiative. It's all come from the Congress and from legislatures. And the initiative is a double-edged sword, but it's not 50-50. I view it more as 90-10. Almost anything that's popular, that expands government, you can get the politicians to do. You don't have to go through the initiative process. Now, sometimes it takes a while for, you know, a cycle or something for politicians to realize, ooh, this is in my interest. But they'll figure it out. On the other hand, term limits, forget about it. Tax limits, spending limits, you know, people think about Prop 13, and they and I believe that Prop 13 did more good outside of California than all the bad initiatives in every one of the 24 states that has the process in the whole history has done bad. Because within 2 years of Prop 13 passing, and Prop 13 was fought by everybody in the state, there were maybe two Republican legislators who stood up. The Republicans were against it. The Democrats were universally against it, 100%. It was outspent about 10 to 1. At the same time that people were losing their homes to the property taxes they could not afford to pay, that was when Governor Jerry Brown, who may soon be governor again, said maybe California ought to have its own space program. They were awash in money. And they said that it would we wouldn't be able to fund police or fire. They'd used all those arguments. It still won, almost 2-1. And within a couple of years of that, not only had California lowered other taxes, like its income tax, 43 states passed some sort of property tax relief or cut. Another 10 states passed income tax cuts. It led to a wave of tax cutting all over the country. So that sort of escape valve is so critical. And almost any, you know, there are sensible type things like a single subject clause that some states have. Well, Florida is a great one because Florida has a single subject law that they have used to strike down almost any initiative they don't like. They say that if you do something that affects different parts of the state constitution or affects if you cut taxes and from those taxes funds go to local governments, that's two issues. And they've been able to block a lot of stuff. One of the reasons that I favor a very wide open process is because legislatures will constantly look for ways to undercut that process. And my view is if the people are for freedom, basically, we have a lot to gain from the initiative process. If the people are not basically for freedom, we have no hope. We have a hard time controlling government when the public is with us. I used to joke when I was doing term limits that I'm on the wrong side of an 80-20 issue. I'm with the 80% of the people who are for term limits because some folks have their hands on the levers and then there's the rest of us. So I am convinced that our strength is the public and the public's basic belief. 300 million, they all have different beliefs. I'm not trying to say, oh, the whole country's all, you know, card-carrying libertarians. But the basic belief in freedom, fair play, the rule of law, those are there. They're huge reservoirs in the public, and they are there for us to use to hold government at bay and to make inroads for freedom. And the initiative and referendum is a great process to do that, and one that, while it can make mistakes, just rarely has. Yes, and we're running out of time.
Last question, please.
Yeah, sure. I just wanted to have your comments on the facts that I've run into, and actually, I'm one of these people that don't find issues like the initiative, personal representation, et cetera, particularly sexy. It's just really hard to work up a good emotion around them. And it seems like only libertarians care about them in the first place. It's really hard to explain and then mobilize, you know, public force behind any of those processes.
You know, I think you will find folks on the left. There's a nice little group on the left that believes in democracy, and they might come at it a little differently, but I think they're potential allies in these fights. And then the average person very much believes that. I rarely, if I'm talking to someone who's politically, you know, works in politics for their day job, they are always looking at it, do I win or lose? How could I game the system? The average person likes the basic idea of it and the fairness that anybody gets a vote. So the average person likes it, but I do think it has more energy when there's an attempt to take it away. And just quickly, I meant to mention this in my talk, but here in Maryland, you've had a Supreme Court, or actually it may be a lower court ruling, that now requires this triple match on signatures. Mm-hmm. And it's back being litigated in the courts. There is a bill in your legislature, Senate Bill 240, that would fix it. Now, some people argue it would go way the other direction. But, frankly, I'm not sure that they're right. And even if they were, I'd rather it go way in the other direction where too many signatures get approved than where they're literally striking down 90% of the signatures in some of these cases. Because if you, just real quick, if your name's Martin T. Madison, and you sign it Martin T. Madison, and then write Martin Madison, that signature doesn't count. If you're registered Martin T. Madison, and you sign Martin Madison, and print out Martin Madison, that doesn't count. They all three have to match each little initial, and it's silly law, and it's designed to thwart what is a very vibrant process in the state. So I would encourage libertarians, look at that, contact legislators about Senate Bill 240, and there are a lot of these local efforts here in Maryland. There's one now on slots in Anne Arundel, but I see them from time to time. I know in Howard, Prince George's, I think you've got term limits by initiative and also a property tax limit. I think term limits or something finally got through in Montgomery County. I think is that Flicker or
Robin Ficker,
who's done that. But these are things that libertarians, I think, can really sink their teeth into and make a difference.
We've got the toughest term limits and the toughest tax gap in the state, and I'm the president of the Emerald County Tax Association. I go to meetings where we're castigated, and nobody even knows that I'm the president. I don't tell them. And they say, this is a terrible bill. The school board, every other meeting, is talking about it. And the county council. And I go, well.
Yeah. If they're not hollering, you know, you somehow feel like you hadn't done your job.
Okay, let's hear it for Paul.
Thank you.
Thank you. Make Andrew on in a few minutes.